Okay, then it looks like the recording started. So I just want to thank you again for joining. We've got a relatively small group today, so but we can feel free to keep this interactive if you have questions as I go through this through the presentation, and I'll also make sure we have time at the end for questions as well. Let me switch over to the other presentation here, and we'll get going. So a little bit about me. I'm guessing if you found me through places like Twitter or my blog, you may know a bit about me already. But just to introduce myself, I'm currently the team lead responsible for fostering a community around IBM's data management solutions, such as DB2, Informix, IMS, U2, InfoSphere Warehouse, and other solutions. And basically, I'm looking at how we can use social media and social marketing to communicate with and interact with people who care about our solutions. So a big part of this is reaching out directly myself with information, but also encouraging others inside IBM and outside IBM to participate in the social marketing communities we have out there, to start blogging as well. And I figure as long as I'm going to talk about blogging, I might as well make it open to everyone who might be interested in it. And that's why I'm here. Hi to the folks that just joined. Welcome to the call. We've just got it started, actually. And if you're not in the web conference already, you can certainly encourage you to join there as well. So prior to this role, I've been with IBM for almost 9 years now, probably over 9 years now, much of that with the Lotus organization in a variety of different roles. I started blogging at adamgartenberg.com a little over 2 years ago now, and before that was pretty involved in from a reader standpoint, a monitoring standpoint, what was going on in the blogosphere around Lotus products and elsewhere, and really kind of watched the rise of this as a medium and social networking as a phenomenon. And, you know, as someone that started a blog myself, and I can tell you the hardest part is getting it started. It probably took me 5 or 6 months to go from the point where I said, okay, that's it, I really need to start blogging, to I actually had my site up. I know what it's like to go through getting it started and trying to figure out what kind of content to talk about, and that's also why I'm here, to help people get started so it doesn't take you 6 months and it can take you, I've done it literally as little as 7 minutes in setting up a blog, but realistically a couple hours. So that's a little bit about me. Excuse me, I was hoping to learn a little bit about you. I'm not going to call people out on the call. I've got enough folks here. But if you notice over on the right-hand side of your web conference window, you've got a little hand raise icon. So I was hoping maybe we could get a show of hands. How many people here on the call are reading blogs regularly already? Okay, seeing some hands go up. 3 people or so. Okay. Do any of you have blogs already? Any of you already have a blog? Looks like I just lowered all the hands, but in case I missed you, you can raise your hands again. Okay, see some of you. How many of you are involved as an IBMer, a customer, or a business partner with our data management solutions or other information management solutions? Okay, I see one or two hands there, 3, okay. I know I've got a lot of friends in the Lotus community. Anyone from, let me lower everyone's hands now. Anyone coming in from the Lotus side of things? Okay, several hands there too. Very good. And out of curiosity, anyone that found me that's not at all related to IBM whatsoever? Okay, so I'm guessing you're all in here somewhat. So again, thanks for joining. I'll try to keep those things in mind when I go through the session. So a little bit about this presentation. I'm going to talk a bit about why I blog, why blogging is important to you and your company. The big question I always get, what kind of commitment is involved? I'll provide some advice on what you should, things you can, should consider writing about and not writing about, and some other things to keep in mind as you look to start your own blog, and then some advice and next steps. I do want to get this just to be clear up front. I used to try to pack more into this presentation, and I found I was at 59 minutes into the presentation and still had 20 slides left. So I've split out some of the content that I used to cover into a few different sessions. So this is my blogging 101 session that's really about kind of why blog and what the benefits are and some things to keep in mind if you're trying to decide if it's right for you or not. I have a blogging 201 session, which will usually be the second Thursday of every month. Next week it'll be Friday, though, where I actually walk through step-by-step screenshots of how to set up a blog and get it up and running. And then I have a blogging 301 session, which will usually be run the third Thursday of every month, where I it's really geared around people that are blogging already, and some advice and tips on how to keep it going and keep the blog fresh, and new ideas to write about, or other best practices that I've either found myself or learned from others to pass along. So with that out of the way, I want to take a step back and kind of look at the big picture here. So going way back in the beginning, there was a website. Companies put websites out there. The website was good. And in came the marketers, and we filled the website with data sheets and demos, white papers and presentations. And people came, and they read the website and ignored it. This is a problem a lot of us face. Instead, they sought out other sources of wisdom. They asked questions, posted questions on LinkedIn, and they searched Google, and they listened to the crowd. And this really gets us back to blogging, because if you look at what's going on today, you look at what's going on in the world, people aren't necessarily listening to the official word of the company. They're putting a lot more value on word of mouth, on words of colleagues, words of strangers that they find online that have firsthand experience. And blogging can have a lot of benefits to take advantage of this phenomenon. And it's not really a new phenomenon. It's something that's been going on for years. It's just that technology has greatly changed the scale at which we can reach out and influence that impact of that word of mouth, bring attention to ourselves and our companies, to our solutions, and to be able to respond proactively to situations we might find out there, whether they be threats or opportunities. Blogging, again, speaking of personal experience, can be very rewarding, both personally and for your business. It offers a way to share information and news about products, to establish thought leadership for your company or for yourself, to build a connection with the community, and serve as a means to solicit feedback from those community members. Also very important, it puts a human face on yourself and on your business. It shows that you care what your customers and other constituents think. It gives you a chance to explain your story in a lot more detail and with more timeliness than you might be able to do from just a regular static product website or even through a press release. So a lot of benefits there. A little bit about why I blog. Like I said, I started a blog about a little over 2 years ago. And what I found was there were a lot of times I wanted to share my thoughts on things. There were things that I was reading, I was seeing that was going on in the industry, and I wanted to share my knowledge. I wanted to kind of pay back to the community for all of the things that I had, the benefits I'd received by reading other blogs or other websites out there. It was also something that I thought was important for me professionally at the time. I was the offering manager for Lotus at the same time, and there was just, like I said before, there's only so much we could do with our static web pages. I wanted to get news out there. I wanted to provide more details than I could otherwise. Things that I might share with the customer during a one-on-one briefing, but I only do so many of them, versus being able to put information out there and share it more broadly, whether it be about upcoming product releases, about, news about our product, more detail, or like I said, just observations and on the things that were going on in the industry or in the world. So coming back to the moral of the story that we talked about before, it's not just anecdotal evidence that says that people are listening to the community. There's actually been a number of research projects done on this. This is one that was done by the Keller Fay Group and sponsored by Jack Morton Worldwide that went out and looked at what were the most important influencers when it came to work-related purchases. So this isn't even going out there and, buying a new book or buying a CD or a camcorder or something. This is actual work-related purchases. And they found that 53% of people were influenced by colleagues and friends and word of mouth. Compare that to direct mail or email or even press coverage. It's over twice as much as the impact and the influence that press coverage has. So speaking as someone in marketing, we spend a lot of time out there trying to get press releases and press coverage and influence analysts. And the truth is people are listening to their colleagues or word of mouth or personal involvement with someone from a company a lot more than all of that work that we put in there. And that's why something like blogging is so important and so influential, because it allows you to put that story directly out there. So a little bit about why blogging may be important to you from a personal standpoint, because let's face it, even if you're doing this officially on behalf of your company, you're still the one that's putting all the time and effort into doing it. It allows you to establish personal brand. It allows you to go out and build a name for yourself, to establish credibility as someone that's knowledgeable in your particular field. It's important from a professional standpoint, you know, both in your current job, and frankly, it's important for you going forward as well, in terms of, you know, whether you're applying for jobs in the future, whether it's trying to get advancements in your own company. Like I said, I started this up. This wasn't, you know, my blog wasn't on my official job requirements or anything when I first started it up, but, you know, I certainly put it on there when I was doing my review at the end of the year, and worked its way in, and I was certainly recognized for that effort, and I know others are as well, even if it wasn't something that was officially part of my day job. It allows you to expand your personal network. You know, I've met a number of people through my blog that I wouldn't have met otherwise, or I met them through their blogs that I wouldn't have met otherwise. It's always helpful in doing your own job. It's helpful in you know, your future career decisions. You'll find yourself starting to get invited to speak at conferences, or if you're applying for it, you can show people your blog, and they can say, boy, this person, you know, really knows what he's talking about, even just by glancing through the type of things you're writing about. It can really help with that. It helps improve your communication skills, which is something that, you know, we can never highlight enough, you know, in any kind of job. It can help you do your job better. It can help you share news and detailed information about, you know, your products, your company. You can clear up misconceptions in the market. It can make sure you're understanding the needs of your customers and constituents. It can help you refine key messages and selling points. Again, it's, you know, some of this is what I get from it from someone in marketing, but I think you'll find a direct analogy to whatever your field might be. You know, instead of publishing a website and saying, here's our key message, and putting up brochures and collateral, you can try things out on the website. You know, you can try things out through your blog in advance. So all sorts of things that you can see benefits from blogging from a personal standpoint. And of course, blogging can be important for your company too. Whether you're acting officially on their behalf or just unofficially. It allows you to share information that may not be worthy of a press release. It may be hard to find on a corporate website because it gets buried under other things. That may be more detailed than you would post on a corporate website, or shared on a more timely basis than an unofficial website. And you think about it, I know our website and IBM, we try to keep it up to date. I think we do a pretty good job, but it's not as immediate. And there are frankly things that, it has a set structure to it, versus something like a blog where you can tell a story, not just the news. And that's really how you build that connection to people, how you put a human face on your company rather than being the corporate entity with the official looking website. There are a lot, again, speaking from my experience as a product manager, there were a lot of times where our press team would say, you know what, we can't issue a press release on that. It's not big enough news. Or, you know, we've got a press release coming up in a month, and we don't want to spoil that by doing another press release right now, because the news then is going to be bigger. But I found things on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, that I wanted to share, whether it's previews of upcoming features, whether it's more details on features than I might want to fit on a website, answering questions that I received one-on-one. You know, I have two customers asking me a question. Chances are there are plenty of other people out there with the same question. I can post an answer to that on the blog. I might not have a spot for that on an official website. It allows people to give you feedback. I think one of the best examples I found of the value of the blog was when we released, same time, 7.5.1, I think it was, and we came out with a Mac client for the first time on that new platform, on our newest release. And pretty much it sucked. It was not ready for prime time, and we had released it anyway. And people let us know, which when you think about it, you know, on the surface, I hate the fact that we have a product that people were not happy with. But on the other side, you know, whether they tell us about it or not, they're unhappy with the product. By posting things on my blog and their own blogs, and by giving me a place to respond to it, I could come up front and say, okay, you know what, you're right, it wasn't quite ready, we should have held it in longer or tested it longer. Here are all of the complaints that you've raised so far, and here's what we're going to do to address it. And I was able to get right out in front of it before it ran away, before people are talking in forums behind our back or just telling each other, you know, don't bother using this, it's not any good, or worse, thinking, okay, IBM doesn't know what they're doing, I'm going to go look to Microsoft for my solution. We were able to go out, and I was able to use the blog to respond to the request. So I could show that we're listening. I could be upfront and say, okay, we can't fix these immediately, but we'll look at when we could do it. A month later, we had a hot fix on the schedule already. I was able to do an update post and say, okay, here are the, of the eight major complaints about the Mac client, here are the five that we're going to be able to fix with this hot fix that's coming out in 2 months. So already I was able to talk about where that solution was. When the hot fix came out, I was able to alert people to it, so they were sure to go to look for it. And again, solicited the next round of feedback. And so of the five things we fixed, people were happy with four of them, but one of them they still weren't happy with. And I was able to take that feedback back to the development team again. And when we finally came out with the next version a few months later, we had a product that by and large people were satisfied with. So we were able to get that feedback. We were able to respond to it, to put some control around the message. So this wasn't something that just started running away on its own. And to share information, in a timely manner. I probably still wouldn't want to put on the official IBM.com/same time page, okay, we know the Mac client isn't good, but we'll have it fixed in a few months. But because the blog is a more personal interaction and more two-way interaction, I was able to do that on the blog. So it can be a place for people to give you feedback. You can foster discussions. Mary Beth Raven, for those of you who might not know her, is our design lead for the Lotus Notes client. And for the last 2 years or so, she's been running a blog, actively soliciting feedback and advice through the entire design process for the redesign of Lotus Notes 8. And it's still going on for 8.5 and future releases. She's posting design models. Which way do you want the toolbar? Do you want the window tabs above or below the toolbars? What's the easiest way for you to format to use the sidebar? Do people actually use this feature? Because it's one we're not sure we'll be able to include or not. She posted the updated icon set because the icons were in a big need of a refresh. And, there was an overwhelming feedback saying, okay, some of these are good, some of these were hard to read, and some of them you changed it around, which means my database knows to use icon 122 for the up arrow. You just made that a smiley face. So all of my existing applications will be broken if you change that around. It's fine to update the up arrow, but you've got to keep it in the up arrow spot. So, things like that were very helpful feedback, and we've seen a lot of success with the product as a result of getting that feedback in advance as opposed to, building a product and then testing it and hoping people like it. Blogging is also very helpful from a search results standpoint. Google really likes blogs. You're putting a lot of information out there. You're developing a lot of content. You're using a lot of keywords and a lot of links, and that really helps with search result rankings. So when someone's out there searching for your product or your solution or what have you, you'll filter up to the top of the Google rank of the Google search results as well. And it also can help you show that there's an active, vibrant community around your company and your product. It's not just a website that gets updated every 6 months. You can actually go out and you have a corporate blog or a personal blog tied to your company, your business, and you're able to go out there and say, here's what we're doing. I just visited another customer. We just won a big contract. Even if you're not able to name names, you can still talk about what you're doing. You can still show how active you are. They see that you're out there flying all over the world. Okay, this must be a company to pay attention to if they've got business in, Shanghai and Munich and France and Paris and what have you. So, as a little bit about why blogging is important to you and important to your company, the next question I often get when I reach out to people about blogging is, but is anyone really going to read my blog? So I can think of no better example than myself. I spent 2 years writing around about a product that is admittedly very narrow and esoteric compared to all the topics out there. I still had over 80,000 visitors, over the course of my year and a half, 2 years. You can see the graph on the top is the RSS hits. Coming in, a very steady rise in people subscribing to my blog through blog readers. It's one of these things that you start out and you publish your blog and you get 10 hits that first day and go, that's it. And the next day you get 15 and you go, okay, that's it. But, it'll keep growing. And before long you have 100 hits a day and you have 100 hits a day over 300 days a year. And all of a sudden you look back at the end of the year and you go, wow, I had 40,000 unique individuals come to my site last year. And it's all through Google and networking and getting tied into the communities. Lotus has a very vibrant community. We're really building up the community around IBM's data management solutions. Chances are, whatever you work in, there are networks of blogs and community sites and places where you can link to them and they can link back to you. And if you put good content out there, people will find you. Even if you're out there thinking, my topic's not going to be that interesting. There's someone else out there that's interested in specifically DB2 for virtual worlds, or running SAP on DB2, or you know, using Lotus connections or what have you. You know, there is a demand out there. The next question I get shortly after, is anyone actually going to read it, or I don't really have anything interesting to say, is what kind of commitment is involved? So my recommendations are on how often do you need to post. I usually recommend at least once a week, depending on what you're writing about and how engaged your community is. You can certainly get by less often than that. The key thing is establishing and maintaining that connection to your readers. You don't want them to forget about you. You know, you want to make sure that they think of you as something that's relevant and current that's going on there. Now, I personally find I probably average 20, 25 posts a month, but it comes in spurts. There'll be times where I'll post 5 posts over the course of 2 days and then go a week and a half without writing anything because either work or family life has gotten in the way and I just don't have time. And things will build up and they'll come back and go, okay, you know what, there are actually 3 things I want to write about right now that, you know, the first one I put off, I'll get to it. The second one, okay, I should write about that soon. Now all of a sudden there are 3 things sitting there in my draft folder. I say, okay, let me get to these today. Other time there's a lot of news going on, and I'm posting once a day for a week because there are lots of things to talk about. How long do posts have to be? This is one of the beauties of the web, is by the time you format things and add sidebars and allow for browser width, even short posts look long on the screen. The truth is you don't need to write long multi-page essays if you don't want to. I find it really the length of my posts really varies. Sometimes it's 2 sentences and a link over to someone else's blog. Sometimes I'm writing several paragraphs as I'm writing a longer thought piece or analysis on something that's going on. So it really does vary. And how long does it take to create a post, which is really the ultimate question people are getting to. And this really varies. The truth is it can take, I would say an average 30 minutes to an hour. If I'm doing a longer piece, it can take 1 to 2 hours. If it's a short piece, and I did one the other day, our data studio team made some announcements, and I basically grabbed a paragraph out of it, stuck a sentence at the top that said, looks like the data studio team's been really busy, and pasted in a paragraph from them and linked over to them. I don't think it took more than 5 or 10 minutes. But again, on average, I would say half an hour to an hour between finding something to write about or thinking through my own thoughts on it, writing it up, finding the links back to the content I'm linking to. And there are times, when I'm writing about products or really trying to respond to people, making sure I get things right, and explain things properly, it could take me even longer than that. So at this point, we're a half hour in. I'm going to take a brief interlude. When I was in college, my friends and I found flyers around campus for the college gliding or soaring club. Basically, learn how to fly a glider, no money involved. So of course, we said, hey, that sounds great. We went to the organizational meeting, and the first thing the guys said as they got up there was, okay, we lied to you. It is going to cost you money. We knew if we said it's going to cost money, no one would come to this thing. So while blogging isn't necessarily going to cost you money, I do want to be upfront and say that blogging is not for everyone. My guess is if you've attended the session, if you've made it this far in, this may be something that is right for you. But the advice I usually give when I talk to managers, when I talk to people inside the company about trying to get more blogs going is this isn't something you want to force someone to do. If someone's not naturally inclined to write and be a bit outgoing about sharing their thoughts, if you add this to someone's job requirements, it's not something they're really into, it's not going to go anywhere. Either they're not going to do a good job of it because it's not something they're interested in, or it's going to fall by the wayside because they always find things to prioritize higher. So just one note on that, don't be afraid if you've gotten this far and said, I'm not really sure this is right for me. And keep that in mind if you've got other people that you work with that you're trying to encourage to blog. Don't force someone that's really reluctant to do it, don't force them into it. Okay, but with that out of the way, I haven't heard any doorbells or chimes as people drop off. Let's talk about suggestions and what to write about. Because again, the number one thing I hear when I talk to people about blogging is, why don't we really have anything that interesting to say anyway? And believe me, I kind of felt the same thing myself when I first started. I think my 1 month post was, celebrating my 1 month anniversary of blogging was, well, I guess I've kept it up this far. I can keep going. Because I really wasn't sure myself. But the truth is, doing this for two and a half years now, there's always something to write about. There's always announcements you're going to make or just made. There are always interesting articles that are out there. There are articles that you've read that were blog posts that other people wrote that you thought are worth passing on or that you want to comment on. There's always stuff to write about. So some of the things to just, rough idea things to write about, product announcements, product feature previews, a press release that you just issued that you want to provide more details on, an analyst report that ranks your company or your product highly, an analyst report that ranks you or your product lowly. Don't be afraid to talk about, bad news too and put your own positioning around it. This is your chance to get your voice out there that you might not have had otherwise. Your thoughts on an interesting article about database compression or a new product that you just read, dropping your kids off at summer camp, the customer visit you're flying back from and the insight that they had or the questions they asked, a debate the product team is having on whether to include a particular feature or not or how to do it, the 100,000 download milestone you just had on your product trial, the planning that's going on for an upcoming conference. These are just some ideas of things to write about. Notice why I snuck in there in the middle, dropping your kids off at summer camp. Even if you're keeping a primarily business-focused blog, don't be afraid to let some of your personality in, let people know what's going on. One of the things that's going to keep people reading, and the difference between a blog and a press release or a website, is you are a person. You are representing yourself as well as the company or the topic that you're covering. So don't be afraid to write about your daughter's wedding or, your kid's piano recital. I wouldn't major on that. If you find that you're writing about that all the time, it might be a good time to start a personal blog on the side or add another tab or another set of, another view into your blog so you can keep your personal stuff a little bit separate from the professional stuff. But the whole idea is to build a connection with your readers, and you do that a lot more if they know a little bit about you, if they know that you can't wait for the new Guns N' Roses album to come out or what have you. So those some ideas of things to write about. Of course, the flip side, what should you not write about? There are things that fall into this category too. Anything that can only be shared or that you would only normally share under a non-disclosure agreement with a customer. Revenue or sales figures other than what's officially reported by your company. Disclosing customer information if they have not agreed to be a reference or agreed to be have it discussed. Don't make firm commitments about product futures. Or basically anything that goes against your company's social computing guidelines or business conduct guidelines. If you work for yourself or you're a small organization, I've included links to IBM's guidelines. I think Microsoft's business social computing guidelines basically say don't do anything stupid. IBM's use a bit more words around that, but more or less come back to the same thing. The guidance I like to give to net it all out is don't write anything on your blog that you wouldn't want to see broadcast on the front page of the Wall Street Journal attributed to you. Most of the people I know in IBM that blog, most do it unofficially. If you look at my blog, you see a disclaimer, something along the lines of, all ideas here are mine and don't necessarily represent those of IBM. But at the same time, I'm still a person with a job at IBM. People can still say Adam Gartenberg, the same time offering manager, said this feature will be in the next release. Or our competitors could still say, go look at what, that product, same time's offering manager said about this feature that doesn't work. It's still out there in your name, whether it's official or not. So you do want to be cognizant of that when you're out there in blogging. But again, I find that something along the lines of, don't do anything stupid is a pretty good guideline to think about. It's always good to have editors if you have doubts about something. You find someone at work, find someone out in the community that you can bounce it off of. I've done that at times where I've sent a draft post around to colleagues to say, okay, can I say this? Does this come across the right way? Most of the time, I don't see the need to, and one of the nice things about blogging is it's relatively easy to fix things or expand on things if your math point isn't getting across right, but it's always something else to think about. And a couple of last words when you're thinking about blogging, be authentic. Blogging really can be a double-edged sword. If you come across as phony, if you come across as someone that's just, focusing on one-way content, check out our latest product and attend our upcoming conference, and don't show that you're open to feedback, that can be a real problem. The cartoon on the right refers to a situation that Walmart found themselves in, where there was a very popular blog, ostensibly by a couple traveling around the country by RV and staying in Walmart parking lots, and about halfway through their blog, it came out that they were actually being sponsored by Walmart's PR agency. And there's a whole big to-do out in the blogosphere about this. And they basically ended up pulling it or significantly reworking it. And Walmart more or less canceled out all of the goodwill that had been generated through this campaign because it came out that they hadn't disclosed the fact that they were actually being funded by Walmart. You know, had they done the exact same thing and just been right up front and said, okay, you know, we're getting money from Walmart to fund our travels, you know, it probably all would have been fine. They just weren't upfront about it. So you do want to keep that in mind. One other thing to keep in mind as you're thinking about starting to blog, one of the things I talk to a lot of colleagues about and one easy way to get started is with a team blog or a group blog. We have a number of them going, some successfully, some I would say not quite as successful as I would like to see. The key thing is making sure you have enough people involved. It helps to have a leader, even if it is a team blog, that can make sure they're the default person to blog about news or to go remind other people to blog. Otherwise, what you end up with is everyone sitting there going, okay, someone else will write about this. I don't have time to do it. And 2 months go by, and no one bothered commenting on the press release that you just issued that you really wanted to provide additional details behind. So it really depends on it. I give you one example from my experience of a team blog. We set up a team blog for the Lotus community a couple of years ago. We recruited 5 or 6 people. We set up a schedule. Everyone would have 1 week to blog, you know, so there's no overlap, and we make sure we have content. And for the first 6 weeks, there was one post a week introducing ourselves, because, of course, we're going to start by introducing ourselves. And then by the seventh week rolled around, we were so busy with planning and product launches and conferences and everything else that we all kind of fell by the wayside. And so we ended up with a blog with 6 "Hi, it's Adam" posts and nothing else. And eventually 1 or 2 people picked it up, and it kind of changed. And one person more or less adopted it as a personal blog rather than as a team blog, and it really grew from there. But like I said, I've seen ones that have been successful. We have some going on right now that have been very successful. But sometimes even if it's a team blog to share around the workload, you still want to make sure you have someone that can own it and have the and make sure it stays running. One other thing up front, like I said, I cover this a lot more in my Blogging 201 session, but there are a lot of different places to host your blog. Some of them are free. Some of them you pay for your own hosting. You know, it can be as little as $10 a month, you know, if you're not doing it for free. And the key things you'll find is differences are kind of along the scale of how personalized you can make it and how much involvement is required from a setup and maintenance standpoint. So there are things ranging from, you know, developer works if you're an IBMer, or I think we actually have some outside IBM but involved in the community. It's a real turnkey way of setting it up. Or IT Toolbox is another way, a real turnkey way of getting it up real quick and easy. But the trade-off there is you really don't have any much chance for customization or personalization. WordPress.com can get you a free blog. Blogger is another one. You know, both of them, you can be up and running in easily under an hour. You might want to put another hour or two in just to really, you know, customize look and feel and add some graphics and things like that. But get it set up real easily. If you really want to host it on your own domain and really have full control over it, you can do something like TypePad or WordPress.org. Lotus Notes also has a blogging platform, a blogging template that you could use. And these do require a bit more setup and maintenance on an ongoing basis, but you get the benefit of having the full control over it. But like I said, my Blogging 201 session, which I'll next be holding next Friday, pretty much just focuses on that process of getting the blog set up and running. So some advice and next steps. Decide if blogging is right for you. Hopefully you'll find that it is. Feel free to ask someone like me or another blogger for help. You can also attend the monthly Blogging 201 and 301 sessions if you're, you know, want more help from me. I'd be glad to do that. Make sure you're reading other blogs if you're not doing so already. One of the best ways to find content, but also to just get a feel for style and substance and how other people approach things, are to find other blogs, whether it's blogs in your particular industry or field, whether it's some general ones that are out there just writing about the topic of blogging, or politics or other things that are interesting. It really helps to your own work to read other people's too. If you're not ready to blog externally, try blogging internally on a company intranet. IBM has a very thriving intranet for blogging and blogging platform. I'm guessing many other large companies may, or you could set one up yourself if you with possibly a little bit of work. But it's a good way to get going as well. I know a number of IBMers that have started that way too. A lot less risk. You know, you say something stupid inside the company, you know, it's all within the family. You say something stupid outside the company, well, it can be a much bigger deal. And it's a good way to get some sense of, okay, am I going to have the time to dedicate to it? And one of the advantages of that is, of that approach is, you've got a whole lot of content pre-built when you go to start launch an external blog. And like I said, I've known people that have done that, that started internally, and, you know, for the first month or two of their external blog, they were more or less repeating and updating things that they've posted internally that were still relevant for the outside community, but made it very easy for them to get going. So with that, let's open it up for questions.
Adam, it's Howard. Do you maintain, at this point, an external and an internal blog?
I actually primarily have an external one. I've had a couple different internal ones that were focused on specific topics. So I don't really have a personal internal one. I'm on a team right now that is a web council for the information management brand. And so we started up a group blog just so we could, as an easy way of sharing information for each other. So rather than emailing each other every time we found an interesting article on social marketing or something, learned about something another team is doing, we're just posting it to the blog. The advantage is others inside the organization can benefit from that as well. So even though we're doing it for ourselves, for a while I had an internal blog focused for the same time sales team where, you know, we had newsletters that were getting a bit overrun. I was finding more and more interaction with our sales teams where I was pointing out things that they should have known about, you know, resources and presentations that we had out there for months that they just hadn't come across. So I started an internal blog as a way of feeding out information to them. So as opposed to, you know, I'm not going to mass email every single salesperson when I post a new strategy presentation.
Right.
But I'll post that on the internal blog for the people that subscribe to it or people that search our intranet. They'll find it there.
Right.
Any other questions I can answer about blogging, about, you know, concerns, fears?
Adam, this is practical. We're considering doing a blog for our internal users, and I'm trying to promote the new features of Lotus Notes, and just don't, I mean, I've gone out to, like, Tech Notes, and I've, you know, thought about, you know, taking some of that data and putting out there, this is how you fix this problem, but I'm just not really sure where to even get started for that kind of blog. Any suggestions?
Interesting. So there's a lot, I mean, there are places you could look to see what other people have done. So there's certainly things out there in Tech Notes or a lot of existing resources. You know, I'm you know, speaking as someone that knows Lotus Notes well. There's a lot of information in that they've redesigned the help fields to really be much more more like tips and tricks and actual walking through how-to information.
Right.
But a lot of people don't know that. So you could, you know, you could steal right from there. And certainly
that's kind of my thought was
but
a lot better than it used to be.
Alan Lepofsky's blog, if you're not familiar with it, he's got a large number of tips and tricks and things in there too. And you just get started. You know, one of the nice things about blogs is a two-way dialogue. So you can put stuff out there, and one of the first things can be, okay, what are the biggest issues for you? And you might not get a lot of feedback, but chances are if you have three people saying, you know, I'm really having trouble using the calendar, you know, chances are there are a lot of other people with problems using the calendar too, and, you know, make a post on that. And it's a very easy way for you to elicit feedback from people on what they want to see, as well as sharing the information and sharing the responses on it.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you.
Sure. Other questions? Well, if not, you can always feel free to get in touch with me later. You can leave a comment on my blog or email me from there. You can find me on Twitter. I don't have my email address on here, but it's G-A-R. You know, I'll put it in the comments section over here as well. You can reach out to me directly. Glad to help. I can type properly here. So I put it over on the Q&A tab in the web conference. But you can always, you know, I'd be glad to help in the future going forward. And again, I welcome you to attend the Blogging 201 if you found after this that you're interested and want to take that next step. Like I said, getting it up and running is the biggest step, but is not at all hard to do. Come join me next Friday. I think it's 11 Eastern time for the the blogging 201 session. I'll actually walk through, you know, screenshot by screenshot, how to get a blog up and running in no time at all. And thank you for coming.
Thank you.